The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat, this is an official colonial government broadcast.
Welcome, welcome back to the Battlestar Galactica.
Are you already exhausted, Mark?
I came too hot at the top.
Hey!
I know, it's like I got in some rapid aging machine. Like I started young and then ended like Ed Asner. So another episode of the Battlestar Galactica guest, starring my colon.
Please let it not.
I know. Should we start this again?
Like, no.
No. Trish is making me stick with my own insanity. Thanks.
Yeah.
Hey.
Talking about your colon.
I know. That is after a weekend spent with Mr. Edward James Olmos in Prince George, British Columbia, in which he regaled a table full of people about exactly how efficient his digestive tract is.
Oh, yes. Especially turning vegan, there's an adjustment period.
Yeah, no, he was like, yeah, man, I eat something right now, and 45 minutes later, I go to the bathroom, and it comes right out, and I'm just clean as a whistle. Like, all right, Eddie, it's lunchtime, but cool. Thanks. What did I eat today? I had lentil beans.
Ooh.
All right, Commander.
Well, I've got to have a colonoscopy.
I mean, everybody should.
Yeah.
I hear it's good for you.
I'm kind of not looking forward to it, I'm glad they knock you out.
True.
Although, can you give me double the drugs?
Yeah, come on.
I like to make sure I'm full asleep.
Double the drugs, put me in make it like it's a kid's birthday party. If there's like cake and balloons and maybe a clown or two.
Make sure I'm still a little high when I wake up so that by the time I don't really know anything's been done until I get home and you're not in front of my face anymore.
Yeah, I don't feel right and I can't put my finger on it.
Well, you can.
Somebody did.
Somebody did.
I feel different.
I feel good. Okay, this is an interesting start to Battlestar Galactica.
It's all my fault. We're supposed to be talking about Battlestar Galactica. I'm Mark Bernardin.
And I am Trisha Helfer.
And this is Sci-Fi Wire's Battlestar Galactica cast, of which I'm sure they will not like us to start this episode of Sci-Fi Wire's Battlestar Galactica cast talking about colon health.
The Admiral started it.
He did. It's all his fault. Hey, previously on the Battlestar Galactica cast, Michael Trucco was awesome.
Yes, he was. He was with us for two episodes.
I know. He hung around. Like, you know, we were feeding him wine or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't get rid of him. It's too handsome. I'm tired of these guys looking all friggin' handsome. No.
Pyramid player coming in, stealing Starbucks' heart.
Making up sports.
Yeah, but a lot of heavy shit happened last episode. We discovered what the farms are.
Yeah, the Cylon kind of egg breeding farm, donor stealing place. That's maybe English.
A little Handmaid's Tale esque, and then with robots involved, and then Adama's back and trying to make sense of not really fully realizing, I think, how divided the fleet is quite yet.
Yes, because Rosalind has taken a third of the fleet back to Kobol because she's for darn tootin' expecting Starbuck to show back up with the arrow of Apollo.
Yeah, and I don't think Admiral expected that many to go.
No. It's like, it's going to be one or two. And then suddenly, it's a third of the fleet. So, and as we pick up on Home Part 1,
written
by David Icke, and directed by Sergio Mimica
Gazan.
Sergio. As doing a little research, I discovered that Home Part 1 was not supposed to be a Part 1. There was just supposed to be one episode that was supposed to be just Home. and Sergio, when he got it out of post or got into post, was like, listen, we have too much for one episode and we can't cut it out. So the producers then went to Sci-Fi Brass and said, listen, can we blow this out into two episodes? And so then the reason why David shares writing credit on part two with Ron is because Ron went in and sort of helped him kind of
expand the story.
Yeah. Then. You know, just blast it out a bit. And it seems as if a lot of that was just character stuff. A lot of that was, you know, two people in a room together talking, you know, one person looking in a mirror talking, you know, that kind of just, we're going to be able to dig in and let these character moments breathe because there's so much that has to happen. You know, we're bringing the fleet together. We're, you know, it's Katie and Starbuck. Starbuck is back and he's with Apollo. And then there's the whole Sharon stuff. And then you're on the surface of Cobol. And
Apollo kisses her off the top in front of everybody. Yeah. Like, yeah, there's so much character going, character stuff going on. And we've had a few episodes of a lot of heavy action, you know, down on Kobol and also the mutiny and the Cylons, the Centurions boarding, you know, so the first part of season two, there's been quite a few action episodes and things. So this did feel like it was, there's still action going on.
Oh, totally.
But it did feel like it was a little bit more of one that needed breathers and needed that character stuff. I mean, Adama's just back and right. He's, and Ty's fracked things up and...
Yeah, and like Adama needs to be able to process his loss before he can decide to change his mind, you know.
His son has gone behind his back. Yeah. Not only has he gone outside of the line of duty, mm-hmm. but he's also betrayed his father.
Yeah, you said duty.
Line of duty. what is it when it's military?
No, that's totally right. I'm just being entirely puerile and adolescent. She said duty. Duty.
Does that have to do with the colon talk at
it
the beginning?
It totally does.
I thought you were going into like the video game line of duty.
No, not at all. She's just being 8 years old. She said duty. So, as we launch into this episode,
we are now watching
right out of the pipe.
Yeah, Adama.
Adama's trying to wrestle with what exactly have they lost? And Dual is like, well, you know, we lost, you know, 10,000 souls or whatever. He's like, no, I don't want to know about people. I want to know about things. I want to know about resources.
He's like, I don't want to talk about people following a religious nut, as he calls mm-hmm. Roslyn. What have I lost?
Yeah.
And don't talk to me about family.
Yes.
Because he's Apollo is pissed him off.
Family will be a pretty big thread for this episode, especially with Adama. Go ahead, cut me off.
Also, with Adama still so freshly out of almost dying, and he's getting around really well. You notice a few times, like he needs help coming, going up the stairs and whatever. But he's handling it really well. But there's a your life flashes before your eyes, right? When you're in something serious like that. I've never been shot, but I've had serious injuries and there's a difference in your outlook, and then put in a situation that they're put in, mm-hmm. you can understand him being just not quite ready to
and it feels like he's also trying to honor the decisions that Ty made.
Absolutely.
Even as bad as they were.
He is standing up for Ty.
He's kind of like, all right, listen, you got us into this mess. You must have thought this was a good idea. I will respect your decisions and continue to carry them through and choose to view family in one way, which is, you know, you don't betray your family. You don't, you know, family is all about love and all about, you know, sticking together and everything. But once you turn your back on your family, that's done. And then he will pivot towards the end of the episode and realize that, you know, that maybe the chief thing in family is not just love and respect, but it's forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And that, like, you can make mistakes and family will always, like, welcome you back in.
Right. It may give you a hard time.
You might get your ass kicked a little bit, but, like, there's always a seat at the table.
And, you know, he talks about family into the CIC with everybody. And he talks about this whole ship is a family. All of you guys, I love you as much as family. And he's still hurting here, obviously, from previous episodes where he's like, you know, if it was you, I'd never leave, you know, and Starbuck was on that planet. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he was saying to Apollo, if it was you, I'd never leave. So clearly, obviously, he's saying this to also bolster his own he does love the crew, mm-hmm. but he's adding on. He's exaggerating a little bit there, right?
Totally. And he's wounded.
But it's funny because at the end, it comes back to one of those crew members, Dwala, actually getting through to him.
Yeah.
And
actually sitting down and not letting him chase her away, not letting him keep the walls up. And that's a lovely scene.
We'll get there. I'm jumping ahead.
You jumped all the way ahead. First, we have to talk about that even though Adam is trying to hold his half of the fleet together, everything's not all rosy on Rosalind's baby fleet.
No. Baby fleet. I love that.
Because there are questions as to Lee's loyalty, you know, like, are you going to side with your father when push comes to shove? And he's like, hey, I already did side with Rosalind, and push did come to shove. Mm-hmm. And then Zarek is like, hey, man, we should arm our baby fleet. We can take on Galactica. And he's like, come on, man. Like, you know, if they want to take us down, there's nothing that you can do. Nothing any of us can do to stop that.
No, we're not. There's a couple of ships that have some firing capacity.
Yeah.
Which we see in this episode in a little bit. But there's not towards the Galactica and all the pilots.
Yeah, they can't take down a Battlestar with their little ragtag fleet.
No.
And Rosalind believes that Adam has just let them go. It's like, if he wanted us, he'd have come after us. But it's my firm belief that he's let us go. And hey, look, it's James Remar.
I know, right? That's right where we were is talking about one of the ships could shoot down this ship that had come into their area, and lo and behold, it turns out to be Starbuck.
It's Starbuck. But I just kept on looking at James Remar, and I'm sure he has a character name, but I just, it's James Remar.
I know, right?
Hey, James Remar.
And the kiss on the lips.
Oh, damn, Apollo. Can't you see she's wearing her boyfriend's Letterman jacket?
Right? I mean, he doesn't notice that for now. But, and she's like, she should really be thrown in the brig.
If this was Galactica, she would be.
You know?
For sure.
What?
Boom, boom, boom.
Who walks around the corner?
Sharon.
Which has to be very difficult for Apollo to see because...
Yeah, he just doesn't. I mean, he knows she's a Cylon, but he doesn't know. He has no context for seeing her just walking around the corner.
No.
And it's just all hate and fury and anger.
Complete from the elation of seeing Starbuck to this thing that shot his father.
Yeah.
Not very long ago.
Sauntering around the corner. And then, you know, Starbuck's trying to stop him from shooting. And then fucking Hilo is there. He's like, Hilo, who? What? We thought you were dead. Are you a Cylon too? Like, suddenly everything is up for grabs.
And I just made a note. I'm just looking at my notes. I don't know where it comes in here, but it's coming up, I think, after the credits. Do you know there's a Muller that's a malcontent?
There's a malcontent Muller?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. In one of the names, I'd have to watch it again, but Adama says to Ty, I think he calls him Mueller, though. Mm. Mueller's a malcontent. I'm like, wait, what? We shot this in, wait, huh?
How did we know?
What?
What else can you tell us past Battlestar?
I don't even know really what malcontent means, but I think it means bad, like doesn't follow orders.
Kind of like unhappy.
Unhappy.
Yeah, a little bit of a thorn in the side, a prickly burr. Oh, a prickly burr.
A prickly burr. Well, certainly a prickly burr in some side, but I think it's a different person. Anyway, I noticed that. I was like,
well,
oh,
done.
Well, just that name wouldn't pass the check. Because, you know, in film and television, you have to get names checked. So names in scripts change all the time until you start filming.
Right.
And even sometimes I've had it after you start filming. You have to go in and change voice.
By the way, can't be, Juarez. It's got to be Jones. Oh, yeah, all right.
We couldn't clear the name. So I don't think that would get cleared today.
Yeah, Mueller.
But, and another thing I noticed, and then we'll allow us to get back to the show, because I've already made my note and we're past it now. So, the Heir of Apollo.
Yeah, yeah.
When it gets shown in this episode and you really see a good look at the head of the arrow, it now has like stones and diamonds on it.
Did it not before?
No.
Maybe they picked up the stones and diamonds when Katie sat on it in her apartment. Her apartment seems to be a mess. And so maybe there's just like diamonds and golds and shit all over the place.
Maybe. But it, you know, I want to go back. And when he pulled it out, when in the farm, when Anders pulls it out, I don't even think we see him there.
So you think like some rogue crew hand decided to bedazzle the arrow of
the arrow of Apollo got bedazzled. You watch now. Say, look at it. It's right there at 10:08 on my DVD box set.
That is some hot glue gun action going to work.
Do you remember seeing those bedazzled that arrow?
I cannot say that I do.
Maybe I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, Twitter curse me, you guys.
I believe you.
But it really was like, whoa, there was diamonds on that. I mean, a girl notices diamonds.
The bling is true.
And I did not notice diamonds before.
It was a pretty arrow, I guess. Ooh, diamonds.
Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
They are a girl's best friend.
Okay, I'll stop saying these odd, weird things. But anyway, look at those diamonds.
That's serious. Yeah.
Those were not there.
That thing's been vajazzled.
And I will vajazzled. we're sticking to the bottom line today, really? Aren't we?
If there's a bottom of a barrel, we can scrape it like nobody's business. Okay, so we skipped over some stuff.
Yes. So if I'm wrong about that, again, Twitter, yell at me.
And it's hard to vajazzle inanimate objects.
Yes. What's with the walnuts?
I'm not really sure. He's cracking them like nobody's business.
Is it to get strength or is it an anxiety thing?
I feel... probably in the script, it's a bit of an anxiety thing, but I also don't know if that's just Eddie wants to be doing something with his hands.
Yeah, I don't know if it was even in the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Eddie's feeling the need for something. Can I crack some walnuts with my hands? Can you crack walnuts with your hands? I can't crack walnuts with my hands.
But, you know, props does it where they kind of half crack them for you. But, you know, they're picking out the new CAG and there's really nobody that's ready.
It's like, because he's been talking Birch. With, yeah, Lieutenant Birch. I just kept on calling him like Bat Apollo.
And he really fracks up.
He really does. But like, he's having this whole conversation with Ty about like just going through files and dossiers. And he's like, well, nobody in here can replace Apollo at all. And then he's like, well, who do you think? He's like, I don't know. So I don't think we got a choice. And then suddenly in comes the new guy. It's like, well, you made your choice already, didn't you, Bill? Grr. And then Eddie gives some big speech about family after a new guy professes his admiration for Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Apollo was a hell of a gag. He was a wonderful pilot. Like he was a hero, blah, blah, blah. And then Eddie starts going in on family. The ship is a family. It works on trust, understanding, and love. I love everyone on the ship as much as I love my, looks at a picture of his kids, sons. Galactus is still a family. And you're an important part of that family. No, you're not, buddy.
Because we don't see you again, I don't
know.
No,
no. And you shit the bed like 9 different ways.
Yeah. But you're cute.
Yeah.
No, he just wasn't ready. You know, he wasn't ready to be a CAG. And like the XO wasn't ready to be a commander, right?
Yeah. They both have made awful decisions.
Boy, I have some in my life, too.
I mean, everybody's got some bad decisions, but it seems as if this new guy, not Apollo, just doesn't have the gift for it in the same way that Zach Adama did not have the gift for flying.
Yeah. And he would still be alive if he wasn't boning Starbuck.
You know?
I mean, maybe not. Maybe he would have had a car accident or something.
It's possible.
But
his fate was vajazzled.
No, he won. His fate wasn't vajazzled. He was jazzled. He was. He was.
Man, there should
something
be.
By the vajazzled. He
never was.
Mind.
He was cursed by the vajazzled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, now we're getting into one of the worst press conferences.
It's again. It's friggin' journalists. There's 95 journalists.
Yes.
Half the fleet is gone. Apparently, didn't take any of the journalists with them. And they're all shouting at Adama.
None of the journalists want to fall.
Listen, there's no story here with the ex-president leading some religious crusade. We want to talk to this old guy who just gets back on his feet.
Who's acting like a total autocrat here.
Yes.
I actually don't like Adama in this scene.
No, it's he's very like, he starts a little reasonable and ends, he goes full Trump by the end of it.
Yeah.
To the point where like one of the reporters asks about, you know, it's like, is it true that you made up the lie about there being an Earth and that you knew the way and all that stuff? And he's like, hey, listen, you know, anybody who prints that kind of slander, you know, I'm going to throw them in the brig. Like, literally, like, that's the penalty for dissension in Adama's fleet.
But it's actually the truth. I'm not talking about our own politics. I'm talking about he doesn't know where
it is. Yeah.
So like he's actually lying here.
Yeah. He's not actually espousing fake news. It's real news. Yeah. Just this guy doesn't like it. So he's saying it's a lie.
Yeah.
And I'm going to throw you in jail if you say that lie out loud.
I didn't like Adama in this episode.
No.
Not episode, a scene.
Yeah. He's not the guy you want him to be.
But he's recovering. He'll get his mojo back.
He is. He is. But it definitely has that feel of like, we wanted him to return so badly, mm-hmm. but we didn't want this one back.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted old Adama. We wanted old Bill.
We wanted old Bill.
We're not wild Bill.
Oh.
Mm.
Yeah, my something just happened.
So we're going to take a quick break while Trisha solves our technical issues. But for now, stay tuned. We'll be back.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We are back with the robot with technical difficulties.
We've got a Cylon virus in our DVD player.
The Cylon infiltrated Trisha's house.
Just her DVD player. They only want like archaic tech. Her VCR is not plugged in, so they went for the DVD.
Yeah.
So we meet Baltar for the first time in this episode, just kind of like idly watching the world pass him by, like maybe a little bit feeling out of place, out of sorts. He's talking about like fishing streams in this weird, I didn't quite get all of this. Do you remember any of this and how it was menting?
Menting? No, I mean, this was, he's like, who is it? I think he's questioning himself, you know. Mm-hmm. He knew Boomer was a Cylon, mm-hmm. but he didn't do anything about it to save his own, because he was worried about his own ass. And then it shoots Adama, and then he's down on, he had a big, I would say, life-changing moment down on Kobol, and when he shoots Crash down, mm-hmm. and I think he's just a little bit like, he's going through what everybody else went through when they found out that anybody could be a Cylon, where he's just like, I'm seeing Cylons everywhere. And I think he's kind of questioning himself and everything. And it's a moment of self-reflection, I think, for him.
And also like a new perspective, I think. And then most of the people that he sees walking by are not wrestling with the same issues that he is, where he's dealing with, A, everybody could be a Cylon. B, I probably should have died on that planet. C, am I supposed to actually be the father of a baby that's going to usher in the future of, you know, mankind, Cylon, cyborg relations? Like,
and D, I was the one that let her into the defense mainframe in the first place that allowed the apocalypse to happen. So yeah, I think I'm saying here, humans are masters of self-destruction.
Yeah, that was a nice quote. If there's one thing we know about humans with certainty, they are masters of self-destruction.
Which is true.
Yeah, we're amazingly good at that. It's like that and jazz are our one true contributions to culture.
Humans left alone on their own, they will self-destruct at some point.
Pretty much, but it'll sound cool.
Not the crazy jazz. I can't get into that.
No, the like just rando improvisations.
Yeah, I'm like, it's too much for my brain. I need a beat. I need a groove. I love jazz, but when it's...
Well, anyway. when it turns into that, it becomes like math. you know.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's higher math in a way that I can't make any sense out
of. That was way too high in my voice, too. Yeah. Yeah!
Fucking jazz, right?
Yeah, math. Fuck math.
But that's why, total digression, there are but a handful of things that prodigies, like children who are prodigies, can excel at an adult level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's music, chess, and math. Because when you break them all down, they're fundamentally math.
Yeah.
Because they don't require any perspective or context to excel at. So that's why you get kids who can just like are like jazz wicked because, oh no, they just see the numbers. They don't need life experience to know how this works. It's just, it's all grinding data and interpreting it in ways that nobody else has before.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Speaking of grinding data in ways that nobody has before, Sharon, segue. What?
Sharon's in the like, house. I don't understand. I don't know everything. I'm not wired into it. We're not wired in like that. And she goes, she saved them. She didn't have to. She's right. Pleading her case with Roslyn. Yeah.
And Roslyn believes her. And yeah. Or at the very least, she believes that Sharon thinks that she loves Hilo. And that's enough. And Sharon believes that Roslyn will toss Hilo out of the airlock too, mm-hmm. if Sharon doesn't show her the way to the tomb.
Yeah, she says she thinks she's in love. Doesn't matter if it's software or emotion. She wants her baby and Agathon, mm-hmm. aka Hilo, to live. We use that.
Yeah. It's just, it's leverage for her.
Yeah.
And like, I don't care if it's true or not. She believes it's true and she will act as if it's true. And, you know, politics is predicting the way people will act when given a certain thing. And so she is, as we've seen before and again and after and will until the end of the show, Roslyn is a master at being a politician.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very quick study.
She was thrown into it, but exactly. I was just going to say she was thrown into it, but she's a very quick study.
Yeah. You know, and so the problem,
that was Prissy. Mm. Prissy's doing her
laps.
Her laps.
But yeah, and so James Remar, whatever his name is, has been dissenting on sort of Rosalind's call. And Roslyn has to remind him that she's in charge. She's the leader of this whole shebang, and Apollo is her number two, and that is all there is to it.
That's just her running all by herself.
It's her going for it.
He's such a great face to look at.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good.
He's had some really good scenes with Richard Hatch in this. James mm-hmm. Remar and Richard Hatch. Like, yes. They had some really good, just like, we're both bad guys, but we're both like also trying to do good. We're trying to work the system, but we're also trying to survive. And yeah. I kind of liked him in this.
No, they're both really
good. I like them both in this episode.
They both have the same weight of like, we were heartthrobs in the 70s, remember? And here we
are. Well, I was talking about the characters.
But even still, like just seeing those two guys yeah. and like knowing that they probably crossed paths. Like, yeah, I was in the Warriors. You, yeah, Battlestar Galactica. That's right. We were cool.
Right.
And now we got leather jackets and we've got goatees. We're hanging out in a spaceship. This is badass. This is
awesome.
I just was doing Sex in the City and then I showed up here. This is great.
Now Eddie's doing weights.
Yeah, he's doing weights as he's listening to a Viper pilot exercise run.
Oh, I have a question.
Yeah. Sorry. No, shoot.
Back to James and Richard.
Yeah.
Does Zarek believe in the scriptures, do you think, at all, just a little bit?
I don't think so. I think he is as pragmatic a politician as she is, because he does have a line later on where he says president or prophet. In the end, it doesn't really matter. At the end, she's going to need a commander, the man in charge of the fleet, you know, the man with all the guns who makes the rules, and he wants that person to be him.
Right.
You know, like I think he is willing to use Rosalind's belief. He believes that she believes, and that's enough for him because he knows how she'll act because she believes.
So maybe he's just more of a politician than the James Remar character, and that he can play along with the game. Because there was a beat in here that I was like, does he actually maybe believe a little bit in the scriptures?
I mean, I think,
but I think you're right.
Yeah, I think they're setting like James Remar and Richard Hatch up in the same way as you set up Apollo and Roslyn. Which is, you know, here's the person in charge. Here's the person who works for that person who's not nearly as refined at this as they are and isn't seeing all the angles that they see.
Right.
But still believes in the worthiness of their number one.
And Zarek does really defer to her in this.
He does, yeah.
He does in times of the of intensity, like when Starbuck first arrives and they didn't know it that it was her, and he's like, I don't know if he says Madam President, but like it's your decision, basically. And
yeah, like he's an opportunist, and he sees that
total opportunist.
Like he's reading the cards as they fall on the table, and say, like, right, now's not the time to go all in. Now's not the time to call a bluff. Now's just the time to keep playing.
Yeah,
keep the game alive.
Yep.
Meanwhile, our new CAG,
Birch,
not Apollo,
is fracking things up big time.
He's barely keeping his pilots alive on a training exercise.
Hot Dog and Cat are both allowed to go to the meteor and try and blow it up together, and Cat almost gets killed.
Yeah, Cat's going to do a strafing run, and Hot Dog is launching a missile, and the missile hits first and blows up the meteor, and Cat almost dies, and Schmucky McHandsome Face here almost
got Lieutenant Birch.
Lieutenant Schmucky McHandsome Face almost gets his people killed. But it's not as if Apollo is also fully on his game, because he's emotionally compromised at Sharon.
Yes.
And so, like, he walks in to looks at her in the cell, and, you know, just he just has rage and anger and sadness, and all he wants to do is shoot her in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost does until Kara shows up. And she lays the smackdown on him, but good. You have no idea what happened to me on Caprica. So while you're standing here polishing off your halo, consider for a second you may not have any idea what you're talking about.
And now, does she really tell him what everything happened on Caprica?
No.
I mean, she's talking, obviously, about the farm and everything that went on. And
totally. And like, her, the time she spent, like, she was in the exact same place he was, which is she saw Sharon. She wanted to kill Sharon. She must be a Cylon. And then experiences taught her that there was something different about this particular Cylon. And maybe not every Cylon is
the same. She was a weak model.
She was a weak model. She fell in love.
She fell in love.
I was young. I was in love.
But she's the first one carrying a child.
Yeah. Only because of that love.
Only because of that love. Yeah. No, it's, and but, you know, Sharon, and that's what she says. Look, we were ambushed, and Sharon actually.
Yeah. She saved our lives.
She saved our lives.
She saved my life more than once.
But how do you know, like, how do the rest of them know that it's just not, they're tracking her to get to, you know, it's such a.
Yeah.
It's such a double-edged sword, if that's the right analogy.
Totally.
Because you trust her on one extent because of what she's done, but then she's still a Cylon. And like, it's too new.
Yeah.
It's too new.
It's too new. It reminds me of that old Chris Rock joke when Siegfried and or Roy got attacked by his tiger. It's like people are like blaming the tiger. It's like, you can't blame the tiger. The tiger's going to go tiger. You know, it's just, it's a matter of when that tiger's going to go tiger.
Yeah.
And it's like, he could have been totally docile and happy and like a freaking pussycat for 10 years. But at some point, that tiger's going to be what he is. And so the question is, what are Cylons?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they programmed to be evil? Are they programmed to do things? Can they be? Sure. But are they
Boomer
always?
Boomer was perfectly fine totally. Until she shot Adama.
Yeah. So it's
but
like.
But I mean, humans can do that too, right?
They totally can. They totally can. But it's like, you know, I mean, hypnotism would be the way that you get a human to do that. It's the, you know, the whole Sirhan or rage or whatever.
Yeah.
You're acting counter to your best interests. But the, like, how do you trust anybody in this world? We talked about it last week. Like, nobody should trust anybody. But you can't actually have a civilization unless you find a way
right.
to trust.
And you can't live your life like that. Like, if you live your life just wary and never trusting anyone, you're
it's no
never, it's not a way to live. Exactly. That doesn't mean I'm going to trust everybody.
No, no.
But,
and Zarek clearly doesn't. Neither does James Remar, who have hatched a slight little plot to, on the surface of Kobol, get rid of
Apollo.
And so then Zarek.
Alosha did say,
yes,
they're basically not supposed to go back to Kobol because blood will be shed.
Yes,
right.
Totally.
And so they're like, well, why can't it be Apollo?
That'd be great.
That'd be great if it was Apollo.
Yeah.
Ow. Sorry, that was a cat.
Here's a schmuck pilot McHandsome Face once again leading
completely. Can I say fucking up instead of fracking up? Because he is just completely fracking up the refueling.
Yeah. A thing that should be simple. Just call the ball, buddy. Just get in there. Paulo's done it 100 times, and it's CAG 101.
He can't line up.
Nope.
The thing to the hole.
No, he can't.
See how I took it back?
You did.
Oh,
she made it dirty. I've been doing the heavy, dirty lifting the whole time.
Now, this scene we're with, I love the bounce on the head.
Yeah.
He's like, where'd you get the pyramid ball? Apollo to Starbuck. Where'd you get the pyramid ball? She's like, I got it back on Caprica. And she looks backwards over this kind of like fence, chain-like fence, and he bounces it on her forehead. And I'm like, I love those things. I don't think that was written in. And I just love that. That's great. The way it was blocked. And it was just, it brought a familiarity to these characters.
It did. And also like a bit of like a weirdly brother sister, like just being a dick, but like a friendly, amiable dick, but still gets a dick move. Lee, she's just chilling out. You hit her in the face with a ball.
And she's still mourning. Not that Sam Andrews is dead, but Apollo doesn't know. She doesn't want to tell him.
Nope.
And it's this conflicting emotion.
Yeah. Especially when the first thing that he does is kiss her.
Right.
You can't be like, oh yeah, by the way, I got some pyramid ass back on that
planet. I was engaged to your brother.
Yeah.
Who I inadvertently had a hand in getting killed. And I have feelings for you, but now I've had fallen for this handsome pyramid player that I can't tell you about. And I love this, having this more personal conversation through the chain link fence.
That there's still a wall between them, but it's porous. Like you can see through it.
Now, is that Sergio Mimica Gazan's idea, do you think? Probably.
I think
as the director? I think that's a great shot for that scene.
Yeah. You know, like there's almost no reason for that fence to be in that room.
No.
Other than like, hey, you know what we want to have? We want to have this scene where they're both like back to back, separated by this gossamer thin barrier. Where they can still say kind of what they feel, but never actually make contact.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really smart. Stagemanship. Sergio.
And then he says, I love you.
Yeah.
He says during it just kind of offhandedly, and he's like, I can't remember everything that he's saying, but I think he's saying something about the effect of, you know, like you took off, you shouldn't be, and I love you. And then she makes fun of it. She's like, did you say I love you?
Yeah. Like tomorrow, this thing is going to end one way or another. Either we find the tomb or we don't. Either we find Earth or we don't. I just want you to know that I'm your friend and I love you. If there's anything you want to get off your chest, I'm here for you. Like, what was that middle part again?
You love me?
Leah Dama loves me?
Yeah. That scene's very, I found myself smiling during it.
And also, foreshadowing.
Right.
We're not going to tell about what, but if you've seen the show, you know.
A certain pyramid player may be seen again.
Not only that, but there may be some unfinished business.
Ooh, nice way to bring that around.
If you know, you know. And if you don't, you'll get there. Schmucky McCag is royally screwing the pooch in space.
And Adama's finally realizing he's got to put an end to this.
Yeah, like this isn't working.
They actually hit. Yeah, there's damage going on. And the ships just kiss enough just to do some damage.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems as if like Schmucky McCag is like not
Lieutenant Birch.
Is not even like pressing the button to transmit his orders. Like he hasn't picked up the phone. He keeps on shouting. He's like, hey, just back off. And nobody's answering. He's like, hey, we're going full speed ahead. You should back off. No.
Some people should not be in command.
Schmucky McCag. It's good to know you, buddy. Stopping by the good ship Galactica as we cast you off into space for the rest of the show.
And Dom's like, call everybody in.
I went
a little too high. Call everybody in.
There you go.
I went a little too low. I can't do a Dama.
It's all right. It's hard. He's got 60 some odd years of being that guy to get that voice. He's had a lot of practice.
And I'm a girl.
You'd have to smoke a lot more to get there, to get your Kathleen Turner on.
Oh, and this, she has got an awesome voice. Now, this scene, when they get to Kobol, after Remar and Zarek.
James Remar.
James Remar. Fuck, why don't I not know his character name? James Remar and Tom Zarek have basically said they're going to try and kill Apollo.
Yeah.
Apollo goes up with the kind gesture and gives Zarek a gun.
Yep.
When they get down to Apollo, because they know there's Centurions. They know there's, you know, Cylons on Kobol. And you're gonna probably need this. Mm-hmm. And he gives him the weapon.
I know. I kept on thinking back to Die Hard when Bruce Willis's John McClane hands what's his face? Alan Rickman's Gruber. Hans Gruber. Like, Hans Gruber's doing an American accent. The hero and the villain have run into each other in the middle of this room, but they don't know that they're the hero and the bad guy. And so your hero gives the bad guy a gun. It's like, you need to defend yourself. There's terrorists everywhere. And it's like, all right, thanks very much. And then the minute Bruce Willis walks away, Hans Gruber drops his fake American accent and starts talking with a German accent and like pulls a gun on him. Sorry, we're gonna, yeah. And so he talks into his walkie-talkie. He's like, Hans, and then he like pulls a gun, pulls a trigger, and John McClane turns around and is like, oops, did you think I was that stupid to give you a loaded gun? What do you think, it's my first day? He's like, oh,
and
stupid. And then a bunch of bad guys show up. It's like, you were saying. And then, yeah, all hell breaks loose. But that moment, that was a little interlude of Die Hard with Mark Bernard.
Well,
I'm taking this one-man show on the road.
It worked.
I know. I just tell the story of Die Hard.
Well, this is a little one-man show of Sharon trying to prove that she's, like, helpful.
Totally. She's found the ridge, the rocky ridge.
She's found the rocky ridge. And then too late, though, she tells Alosha, too late. Don't
touch it. There's a bomb.
But, you know, she's not really wired in. So she's kind of just figuring all this out. And Alosha.
Steps on a grenade.
But, yeah. So, yeah, she steps on a grenade and our sweet Alosha.
Yeah.
Is one of the ones to pass on Kobol.
Yeah, she goes with the gods.
Ooh, somebody else just got hit in the head.
Yeah, because clearly, like, if Sharon knows the scriptures, then every Cylon knows the scriptures.
Yeah.
So they knew exactly where they were going to be coming.
Where to place the grenades. Yeah.
We found the tombstones that were going to be along the path to the tomb. So every tombstone gets a grenade.
And so they are under fire here.
This looks reminiscent of our time with Crashdown.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah, maybe even done like the same day with the same unit. Like, guys, we're not coming back here.
They actually didn't do that.
Really?
No, they didn't do that.
No block shooting?
No block shooting. But if you look, it's actually raining here. Mary's hair is wet.
Oh,
misty.
Yeah.
It wasn't when the other ones were
that
filming.
That must have
a couple
been so
episodes earlier.
Fucking miserable.
Ooh, yeah.
I can't.
It's been raining on this episode, so they weren't shot the same day.
Yeah.
Vancouver, it can be shot the same day and not, but.
I'm sure Mary was like, okay, great, we get to go play in the woods. Hey, it's going to be raining for like 12 straight hours, and you're going to be out there in the woods.
Thank
you have
gosh
to look like
for
you're wet.
Costume people that try and keep you warm, and yeah.
Man.
Sharon goes running off.
She does. Like in the middle of this firefight, she just takes off, and Lee clearly thinks that she's either escaping or rejoining her Cylon comrades to help rain down hell on them. But no.
No.
She's proving her worth.
She grabs, who did she grab it from? I didn't quite see who she grabs this big weapon from.
I think it's from Crashdown's body. Just laying. Call back. Dead guy.
And
she grabs this giant grenade launcher and then she just pops a toaster.
Meanwhile, her hands are, she's still handcuffed or wired or whatever, taped shut. So she.
Yeah. And now Lee learns a little something. You got to be friggin' kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she is trying to save our lives after all. Maybe she is on our side.
And Hino's like, yay, my girl did it.
Yeah, that's my baby mama. You get that. You get it. I loves you. I love you so much, Sharon.
It's the face of the shape of things to come.
Yes.
Don't make fun of it, Mark.
I'm sorry. I'm going to a little bit, though. Just a little bit. Now, is this the same? You were telling us that there was some scene. It's not this scene, I know, but is this the same boat that Eddie would later destroy in a scene where he's like,
yeah. Now that I see this, because he's clearly putting this model together. So this was not the one that he destroyed. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, now that I look at this, you could totally understand him going, I can destroy this because we've built it along the way.
Right.
They wouldn't allow me to paint over this artifact.
Right.
But there was, as he says it, the one that he destroys in later episodes in a fit of rage in one take was like a $65,000 piece of artwork that was borrowed from a museum. So maybe this is like the model that they're making it look like he's doing it, right, and they're not really showing it until they get the full finished one. And then that's the actual one that they borrowed and he doesn't know it. And he smashes it in a take.
Whoops.
Yeah. But this is the scene. It's a lovely scene with Dwala and Eddie where she starts to give him the hard truths and he's like, you're dismissed. And she just.
Yeah. You called me in here for a reason. Because you wanted me to say a thing that nobody else would say.
Yep.
You know, and I also wonder if some of it has to do, like, why she gets to be the conscience of the fleet. And maybe some of it is because he was a pilot and she was the person who talks to the pilots, you know, and so she's always in every pilot's ear. She's, or that role, not specifically Dwala. She wasn't that person when he was a pilot.
But it's that role. It's that, I can say on set to you know, the hair and makeup people are always extremely close to the actors because you're the first there in the morning and the last to leave, and you have that closeness. You have, if somebody's in your ear, or when I did some race car driving and when I did a half mile oval track and you can't see shit and the person in your ear, your spotter, is your lifeline. Mm. And that, I imagine that's sort of similar with the airline pilots, right? It's your lifeline.
Yeah.
And so you have such a close connection with them.
Yeah. And when he wants to talk to his pilots, he has to talk through her until, and she will turn over Galactica Actual. And so she is a little bit of the, like, I can say things to you that nobody else can say. And she tells him, like, she broke your promise.
You asked to talk to me, maybe because you thought I didn't have anything to say, but I do, Commander. It's time to heal the wounds. Time to heal the wounds, Commander. People have been divided. Children are separated from their parents. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, shit. Now we're back to 2019. But no, it's that's what she said. And he was just basically like, you're still dismissed.
Yeah. It's like, you promised us that we would find Earth together. And you broke your promise because you're letting us stay apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really powerful. And then we see Alosha. Alosha is one of the fallen, if not the fallen.
And as the religious leader, to be the one to die on Kobol is pretty a pretty powerful statement.
And it was Rosalind's sort of chief spiritual advisor, the one who helped guide her on her path. And for her, all is not lost, but the cost of this is finally ringing true to her. Just as Adama is realizing as he stands in the crossroads of Galactica that he's forced to make a choice whether I can stay this course or turn around, go back, and do what must be done. And he does.
He makes a very vulnerable face there that just it really hit me. That little almost like upturn of the corner of his
mouth. Then, like, and then he like resets his mouth and is like, all right, I'm going to go do a thing I don't want to do, but I know that I have to do because this can't stand. I got Schmucky McKeg face over here who can't like put a pole in a hole, and I got half my fleet is away and my son is gone. And
it really puts it down to the survival of the human race. Like, I think he's reminded of that because there's been enough of a break where they've gotten into the politics and the this and the that, whereas it's now brought back to the survival of the human race.
Yes, and we're a family.
We're a family, and we need to work this out because we're all we've got. Mm-hmm. And now we're down to, I don't know the count, but like 47,000 or 57,000, whatever it is. I haven't been tracking the count. That was your job.
I know. I've been letting it slide. It's like 47,621 or something like that. But yeah, and it's the moment you wanted to feel when Adama returned to the bridge the first time, which was, okay, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard, and we still got a lot of work to do to get there, but everything's going to be okay. Lieutenant George Catman Birch. See, that guy, his name's Catman.
Catman Birch, but Ben
Ayers.
Ben Ayers.
He's a handsome devil.
Catman, I like that.
But you knew he was never going to last because there's already a cat.
Oh!
You can't have two cats on that thing.
No, you can't. True. But cat is spelled K-A-T.
It is. But if you're talking to somebody. I
mean, the cat that we know, the pilot that almost got blown up by the meteor, she's K-A-T.
She is. But I don't
she's
think
not there's. C, she's not Catman.
She's not Catman.
See? Look it.
I know, but you're not going to.
Luann Cat, K A T.
But does it sound any different? You're not spelling. I'm Cat with a K. I'm Cat with a C. Also, I'm the guy. I'm the Cat Man. I'm the Cat Man. He's so weird.
Cat
that's
man
why he died.
That's probably why they named him Cat Man.
Cat Man. We're never going to say that. So yeah. He's going to die.
No, he did. Ben did his job.
He did his job ably and nimbly.
He made it so that you did not want him to be CAG.
No.
He did his job well.
Lieutenant George Mucky McCagface Birch. I'm sorry, Ben. I'm sure you're a lovely man. Take care of your family.
So what was your fracked up or fracked down? I still can't get it right.
What's the fracked down? My frack down is not a bad thing at all. I'm going upside. I'm just going James Remar.
Ooh.
I'm just going Remarring it all over the place. Like every time he walks into the scene, his little fancy leather jacket, his salt and pepper goatee, just like oozing interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's he up to? I don't know. I want to watch it though. Why? James Remar.
James Remar. Okay. I just can't choose. I have a frack down.
Okay.
The Arrow of Apollo that changed. To bedazzled. But my other frack down, I have two, is I love the bounce of the pyramid ball on the head. Mm. And I love the Dwala standing up to Adama and getting him to change his mind.
That's a great scene.
Yeah.
And I do love, Lee Adama loves me.
Loves me.
He loves me.
Loves me.
Yeah, he does. Oh boy, yeah, he does.
Oh, but no, there's a lot to happen yet.
There's so much to happen.
Dwala comes into it.
So much unfinished business.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I guess that's it. That's it. I liked this episode. It does feel like it's part one of two.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like it's not a complete story just yet.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's interesting that it wasn't initially written that way.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't aware of that.
Can you imagine how quickly that would have had to move to get all of that story in 44 minutes of TV?
Oh, yeah. There's way too much.
Just no way. So yes, good move on their part. And I'm sure part of, you know, the rewrite was, how do we end this episode to make it feel like it's the ending of an episode? And it's, we're going to put the family back together, which is pretty good.
They got their work cut out for them next episode.
They do. Maybe we'll have a guest or two next episode.
Maybe we will.
We'll see what happens.
We're putting some feelers out.
Yeah. We promise nothing, but we live in hope. So if it doesn't happen, I'll be like, you promised me guests. Yeah, we'll give Alec a mic. He can be our guest.
Hey, you came up with that awesome what Adama means in Hebrew, earth.
I know.
I mean, hello, that was like so apropos to what we were talking about.
That was some deep dive yeshiva shit right there, man.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's more.
Woo!
Woo! I'm late. Damn. I'm late on the woos.
Woo!
All right. So
this has been an episode of Battlestar Galacticast brought to you by Sci-Fi Wire.
Mm-hmm.
With the amazing Bear McCreary giving us such lovely accompaniment.
Mm-hmm.
Accompaniment.
Mm-hmm. Accompaniment.
Accompaniment.
Yeah.
You continue.
You were taking us home.
With the fantastic Alex Sarchet.
Yes. Doing our audio engineering. I've been Mark Bernardin. And she's been Trisha Helfer.
And this has been Home Part 1.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with Home Part 2.
Do.
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 Do?
Not do.
Do. She said duty.
Hey, you said vagina.
Yes, we did. We're going to be in detention.
The era of Apollo has been jazzled.
They're going to put us in the...
Hey, it's even like...
It's, yes, it is.
It's even the shape of... Never mind.
And scene.
Bye.